Today in the global economy, brought to you by the Turkish lira, Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act of 1962 as amended, and the word contagion. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 10th of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. I will tell you what, it is rare that the foreign exchange markets top the economic news, but when they do, it is never in a good way. After what's been a really rough year for the Turkish currency, there have been economic sanctions, a whole political back and forth between President Erdogan and the Turkish Central Bank, and growing worries about that country's debt levels. The lira pretty much fell off the table today. It hit at one point a record low against the dollar, which rattled European banks that hold Turkish debt and American banks that work with those European banks. And then President Trump decided he was going to double tariffs on Turkish steel and aluminum imports to the United States. It is a mess for sure, but what is the actual global risk that's going on here? Marketplace's Rima Kreis was in Turkey not too long ago, so she got the call on this one.
Ask almost any business owner in Turkey what they make of this whole situation, and they'll put it plainly.
The currency situation is very bad.
Bedir Olabi and his family run a large coffee business in Gaziantep, Turkey. And he says profits have been shrinking. They import the beans from countries like Brazil and India, paying producers in dollars and selling inside the country in Turkish lira. He says a few years ago,
Turkish lira's rate was 2 in dollars, and $1 was 2 liras. Now it's 4.5.
That was last month. Now $1 is 6.8 liras.
The speed with which the lira has fallen today has really rattled markets.
Per Hammerland is a market strategist at SEB in Sweden. He says many investors are worried because European banks have lent more than $200 billion to Turkish borrowers. If the currency keeps falling, says Christopher Vecchio, a currency strategist with Daily FX,
we could be looking at an outcome where some of these European banks see their excess capital dwindle down, which means they lack the firewall necessary to withstand future crises.
But because Turkey's economy doesn't pack much global clout, it's unlikely we'll see widespread contagion, says Fred Bergsten with the Peterson Institute.
Turkey is not really an integral part of the Eurozone. It's not really akin to most of the major European economies.
American banks and businesses have less exposure to Turkey than their European counterparts. The dollar today stood at a one-year high against the lira. I'm Rima Kreis for Marketplace.
If you're thinking this would be a good point in the program to step back and review the past 5 days in the American and global economies, well, I like the way you think. Dan Rabone is at Yahoo Finance. Lynette Lopez is at Business Insider. They're both in our studios in New York City. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
Dan, let me start with you. And I know. Usually you don't. It's weird. What can I tell you? But look. You heard the end of Rima's piece there about the contagion factor in global exposure. But I want you to step back for a minute and talk about not just Turkey, but other emerging markets and debt levels and how that might play out.
Yeah, I've actually been talking to strategists about this all day. As I said to you, I was really excited to get on and talk about not just emerging markets, but also emerging markets and currencies. So this is something
it's a double win for us.
It's a double win. So look, most of them are saying that they don't think there's a risk of contagion throughout emerging markets. You've got a couple bad actors. Specifically, Turkey has been in the spotlight for a while. Mm-hmm. Their President Erdogan has done a number of things, including supposedly interfering with the central bank, keeping fiscal policy a little bit too loose. That's an aside, really, from all the other things that he's done that have drawn some condemnation from the international community. But places like Argentina, Brazil, some of these places that have just individual particular problems that have weighed on their currencies, their economies, and all that stuff. So the contagion risk right now, as far as EM, isn't really there. The contagion
emerging markets.
Thank you for clarifying.
That's all right.
But there is potential for a contagion risk into Europe because, as you said, so many of these European banks have exposure to Turkey. There are also some American banks with a bit of exposure to Turkey. A lot of people have lent a lot of money to Turkey over the years.
Right. Lynette, do me a favor and let me turn here to the president and his thing on tariffs this morning, in which he doubled the American tariffs on Turkish steel and aluminum. It's not a huge dollar amount in terms of what the import is, but I thought, and in fact, the law says that these tariffs are being put in place because of national security. And here the president is doing it on currency movements. Help me out here.
Right. It's very unclear what he's what his issue is with Turkey. It's actually, the stock market is about $150 billion, which is roughly the size of Netflix. It's a small economy. Like, there's no reason why Turkey should be this massive threat to the United States. The only thing that I can think of is that Donald Trump has yelled at Turkey because the Erdogan administration is holding a U.S. pastor, accusing him of spying. Right. And that is why Trump got aggressive in the first place. This could be a continuation of that. What it really seems like a continuation is Trump's, he seems to pick on the little guy. Like, he didn't go after ZTE, the big Chinese company that traded with North Korea and Iran against our sanctions. He let them slide. But he's going after Erdogan, like Erdogan's the big bad, when actually, you know, the Turkish economy makes up less than 1% of Vanguard's emerging markets ETF.
Right, right.
It's kind of sad.
Dion, let me bring you back here for a second. I'm going to throw you a line that that Larry Kudlow, the president's chief economic advisor, gave me last week, which was, in essence, the impact so far on the American economy of these tariffs has been, his word was de minimis, effectively nothing. Discuss. You got like 30 seconds. Go.
Okay, yeah, right now it's not hitting, but that's because the impacts of the tariffs haven't really taken effect. You've got the impact from washing machines. We've already seen what that can do. Washing machine prices are up about 20%. That's a very small part of the economy, but when you see what's been happening with washing machines just from that one tariff, you could see what could happen throughout the economy. We've got inflation already rising. CPI came out today, already hot, erasing wage gains that Americans have seen. These tariffs could do a lot of damage.
Lynette,
especially.
You have your choice. You can talk about tariffs or you can talk about Tesla. What do you want to do? We got a minute left.
Tesla.
All right. So quick.
I
mean it when I say a minute. Elon Musk comes out the other day, says apparently without telling his board or anybody, he's going to take the company private at $420 a share. He's got funding secured. So far, crickets. What do you make of this? And we should say you cover Tesla pretty closely.
I do cover Tesla. Elon Musk is not a fan of me, but I will say that, you know, try to sit straight down the middle. If you declare that you have funding and your stock pops and you don't actually have funding for a deal to go private, then that could very well be illegal. So Elon Musk needs to show something to Wall Street soon, or he's in hot water with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is already investigating him for those comments and also for his manufacturing process and for basically overpromising and underdelivering when it comes to his shareholders and the cars that he's going to deliver to them. So he's in hot water right now.
Extremely quickly, and I mean like 10 seconds, where is the board of this company?
Unclear. It seems like they're putting together a separate committee to explore their options in terms of going private, and they're not going to let Elon get involved with that. But he basically owns the board of this company. It's like his cousin, some friends from Great. I mean, ridiculous.
We got to go.
We'll see how it goes.
Lynette Lopez, Business Insider, Dion Rabone at Yahoo Finance. Thanks, you two.
Thank you.
All right. Equities today, stocks, I don't know how you say forget about it in Turkish, but the traders sure did. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. I walked out to my driveway this morning to come to work. There was ash on my car from, I'm guessing, the Holy Fire burning a ways down southeast of downtown Los Angeles. The bigger fires up north you've heard of, Mendocino, that's the really big one. And then the Ferguson Fire, which has forced the National Park Service to close parts of Yosemite during the busiest parts of the tourist season. We did a little digging around, trying to find some businesses up there and how they are doing. We found a number for Lori Howard. She runs the Yosemite Sierra View Bed and Breakfast, so we called her up.
Yosemite Sierra View. This is Lori.
Yes, ma'am. My name's Kai Rizdahl from Marketplace in Los Angeles. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. You got a couple of minutes?
I sure do.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you, first of all, tell me where you are and what your business is.
We're up in Oakhurst, which is near Yosemite. We're about 14 miles from the gate of Yosemite on Highway 41. We're a bed and breakfast. We have three rooms, and this is my third try at being a small business owner.
Wow. I was about to ask you how business is, because that's why we're calling you up, but clearly it might not be so good.
Well, like anything else, you sometimes have to make lemonade out of lemons. But yeah, business is a little dicey right now.
Well, do me a favor and look out the window. Tell me what you see.
I see the bottom of an ashtray.
Oh,
lots
man.
Of smoke.
And it's been that way for, what, a couple of weeks now?
28 days.
All right, so now look at your reservations book for me and tell me what you see there.
I see Swiss cheese, a lot of cancellations.
How's business been the past couple of years?
Well, we've been in business now for 10 years. Last year it was National Parks Anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So we were busy from April all the way through October with no breaks. This year it's been quite different because of the fires. Other than that, I think we would have been along the same lines, about par.
Yeah. How much is it going to cost you think, Ms. Howard?
That's one of those things you don't even want to think about. Our thing is we are seasonal. And so for us, we kind of squirrel our summer money away, and then it helps us get through winter.
Mm-hmm.
By this, you know, I'm saying we're probably going to be out about $20,000 to $30,000.
Phew.
It's definitely a hit.
Yeah. What are your fellow bed and breakfast colleagues up there saying? I mean, they must be seeing the same thing.
They're all feeling the hurt. And what's interesting is the Visitors Bureau got together and put out a Facebook for everyone to chitty chat with.
Hmm.
And it was amazing to see just how badly everyone's been hit. But, you know, a farmer has to depend on the weather. You know, we depend on tourism. When you put all of your eggs in one basket, you just kind of have to roll with it, see where you end up, and go from there.
Lori Howard at the Yosemite Sierra View Bed and Breakfast. She's up in Oakhurst, California. Ms. Howard, thanks a lot for your time, ma'am. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome. Take care.
Coming up.
It was like a virus was going through this business.
Celebrity chefs just ain't what they used to be. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 0.75% today, 196 points, ended at 25,313 on all that contagion stuff. S&P 500 off 0.7%, 20 points, 2833. NASDAQ down 0.2%, 52 points, 78.39. For the 5 days gone by, blue chips down 0.6%, S&P 500 down 0.25%, NASDAQ gained about 0.3%. All right, so banks that we were talking about, Deanna and Rima both. Citigroup off 2.3% today. Goldman Sachs down 1.75%. Rite Aid continued to pay the price for this week's failed merger with Albertsons. Shares plunged 3.8%. Bonds rose. The prices did. Yield on the 10-year T-note went down to 2.87%. Safe haven is what you're looking for there. You're listening to Marketplace. Not everybody gets a chance to learn about the economy in school. Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that's smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy, and that is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors, and thanks. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. With apologies to the Lion King, there is a certain circle of life quality to corporate finance in this economy. Almost every day on Wall Street, big investment groups like hedge funds and private equity firms go looking for companies to invest in, or more often, to just buy. Ultimately, what they usually do is carve them up and turn them around for a profit. Happens all the time with companies that are on the lesser known end of the spectrum. But this week, it happened to an iconic American brand. Marketplace's Justin Ho has that one.
The company is Campbell's Soup. It's been around for nearly 150 years, and by its flagging soup sales alone, you can tell it's a bit of a dinosaur.
When was the last time you bought a can of soup?
That's John Stanton, a professor of food marketing at St. Joseph's University and a former consultant to Campbell. He says the $12 billion company hasn't kept up with changing consumer demands.
That's not just a criticism of Campbell's, that's many of the legacy brands.
Legacy brands are catnip for hedge funds like Third Point, which revealed this week it owns more than 5% of the company's stock. Anil Shivdasani at the University of North Carolina says hedge funds are scouring the market for companies whose stock they think could be worth more.
For many of them, the starting point starts with the stock price and whether a company operates across multiple business lines.
Campbell's stock is down 23% over the last year, and it has multiple lines of businesses like snacks and fresh foods. Third Point would like to force an outright sale of the company. Greg Taxon at Spotlight Advisors helps companies deal with activist investors. He says Campbell's board has no choice but to take the hedge fund seriously.
Is there really a buyer or a merger partner that could create more value for shareholders than Campbell's believes it can create as a standalone entity?
Even if there is, things could still get messy. The extended family of the chemist who invented condensed soup owns 41% of the company. But Taxon says Third Point probably didn't invest nearly $700 million in Campbell without making some calls first. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
We've been doing a lot of affordable housing stories lately, mostly because in a lot of places in this country, there really isn't much affordable housing at all. And that's for people in the middle income brackets. For the poor, it's an even more difficult situation and about to get worse. The Trump administration has plans to require people living in public housing to contribute a greater share of their rent. Marketplace's Erica Barris went back to Erie City, Pennsylvania to see what it's going to mean for the people doing the paying.
50-year-old Clara Malave spends a lot of days like this, loading linens into enormous industrial washers and dryers in the basement of one of Erie's big waterfront hotels. It's hot and grueling work, but it is work, and she's grateful for it. Even so, she makes just $8.80 an hour and doesn't know from one week to the next how many hours she'll get.
When I see my check, oh, what a mess. It's not going to make it. I worry every day.
Malave gets nearly $200 a month in food assistance. Her health care is covered by Medicaid, and she lives in public housing, where she pays just under a third of her income in rent. Her small townhouse is tidy and bright. She says it's a refuge from the stress.
I got everything I need in here. I love it. Love it here.
Malave also just got a used car that she hopes will make it easier for her to get work so she can leave public housing. But she can barely cover the payments on her high-interest car loan now. And if her government assistance changes...
I will have to lose my car. My car is necessary, but if we have to choose between my house and my car, I choose my house.
That choice may be coming. If changes proposed by the Trump administration are approved, Malave would have to pay roughly 35% of her income toward housing, rather than 30%. Right now, she pays $36 a month. The increase may not seem like much, but her car payment is more than four times her rent, and her wages aren't going up.
Sooner or later, I'm not going to be able to pay it. I'm going to be out in the street.
Today, Malave has a more immediate problem. She was upsold on a car insurance policy, and she's trying to get her money back. Her social worker, Patrice Johnson, is helping her by making calls.
And is there an estimated date that she should be able to look for it in her account? Nope, that's all. All right, thank you.
Johnson and Malave also spend some time talking about training programs Malave could attend now that she has a car. Johnson, who's 28, grew up in public housing and knows firsthand what it's like.
And I call it chronic crisis. They're in chronic crisis mode. And they could be battling three or four crises at a time.
And in many parts of Erie, that battle is getting even harder to fight. More than a quarter of people live in poverty, far above the national average. That's even as the region's economy has started to recover after years of decline because of the loss of manufacturing jobs. People like Clara Malave feel that once again, they're being left behind.
This is what community looks like.
That's why on a sunny day in June, hundreds of people showed up to march for better paying jobs, more affordable housing, and fewer big tax breaks for businesses.
Stop greed, fight poverty. Stop greed, fight.
Social worker Patrice Johnson helped organize the march, which is part of the national revival of the Poor People's Campaign started by Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. in the 1960s. Linda Pope was there with her two young nephews. Pope is 61 and describes herself as...
Well, I would say working poor.
Hope has spent her life working low-wage jobs at Walmart and at daycare centers. And like Clara Malave, she's also spent years in public housing. At one point, she and her husband were able to buy a house when he still had his job at the paper mill. But hard times came.
You do what you're supposed to do and stuff, and it's just like, you just come out on the bottom most of the time, you know.
So when the list for Section 8 housing vouchers in Erie opened up recently, for the first time in 4 years, Pope put her name on it, along with 1,400 other people. Pope says she didn't think she'd ever be in public housing. Now she says she'll feel lucky if she can. In Erie, I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Take a celebrity chef, pick a big city or a flashy resort hotel, and what you used to have was a guaranteed moneymaker. Not so much anymore, though. Chris Palmieri is the LA bureau chief from Bloomberg News, and he wrote the other day about the twilight of celebrity chefs. Chris, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
What is going on with celebrity chefs? I mean, this is a cultural story, but also an economic story.
Yes, both. I mean, you know, people often ask me, hey, where do you get our ideas for stories? In this case, you know, I write about the cruise line industry, and yeah. I was covering the launch of this new ship, the Norwegian Bliss.
Yeah.
And they mentioned, no, there's no celebrity chefs on this boat. And that, you know, that was a big trend for a while. And So I just started Googling. I thought of every celebrity chef I could think of. And then just with the words restaurant closed afterwards. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this is like a virus going through this business.
There's a list in this piece. Thomas Keller, Gordon Ramsay, Daniel Boulud, Emeril Lagasse, Jamie Oliver. I could go on. They're all closing all over the place.
Right.
It is some combination of my theory, right, the celebrity chef cycle, but also economic reality in terms of locations and rent and all of that.
They got ambitious. They opened a lot of locations. They wanted to be in the highest profile places. The Bouchon here in Beverly Hills, $106,000 a month
wow.
rent Keller was paying. But
that's a big nut to make,
it
man.
Is,
holy cow.
Exactly. But the biggest part here is really just customers choosing different things. You know, right now you talk about food halls. You
yeah.
talk about these restaurants that specialize in one particular, you know, dish, hot, spicy Nashville fried chicken.
Yeah.
And so that is not dependent on the star chef. And that's what customers are wanting.
It's a little bit like retail and fashion, right? I mean, customers just change what they want over time. And some of these places that we listed as having been closed have been open for 10, 12 years.
Exactly. It yeah. just gets a little stale. There was a wonderful quote from there's a British celebrity chef named Delia Smith, and she got this award from the Queen last fall. And she immediately afterwards said, you know, I don't eat out anymore. Restaurants have gotten too poncy, which is where even
is
I had to
know.
Look
what
up.
What does it mean?
Too fancy, you know, yeah. all the, you know, the sea bass drizzled in, you know, what a plum reduction or whatever. People are just looking for something simpler.
Not to criticize these guys for being successful for a long period of time, but also some of them, and largely they're men, we should point out, they're getting a little long in the tooth.
Long in the tooth. I thought you were going to go in the Me Tooth direction.
Oh, well, so there's that, right? Mario Batali and that whole deal, but which is real, right? Because that's caused Batali to lose his jobs and all of that and close his restaurants. But also, they've been around a while. I mean,
yeah,
these guys
I
themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the Lagasse restaurant yeah. in Orlando, for example, closed yeah. after 19 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a long stretch in a business that is ultimately kind of a bad
yeah.
one.
It does work in some cases, though. I was just out at Curtis Stone's place here in L.A., Gwen,
mm-hmm.
right, which is really high-end for a really specific audience, and it looks like he's doing okay. So if they can find their niche, they're doing all right.
Right. And part of it has to do is how many locations they have. I was talking last week to a person opening a new casino in Las Vegas, and they said, we're really searching for somebody that's unique, because if you go to Las Vegas and you've already got one in your neighborhood, you're losing that specialness.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to see the chef and get his autograph or photo with him. You know, everything is lost, and you might as well go to a Cheesecake Factory.
Not only are they not on cruise ships, hotels aren't as big a deal for chefs right now, right? And also the casinos in Vegas.
Right. And theme parks, you know, all of these places yeah. that were attracting, you know, huge crowds of people were for quite a while signing these deals. And they were very lucrative for the chefs, because a lot of times, you know, a hotel or whoever would put up most of the money and just give them a royalty. But, you know, they weren't there to supervise every night. The quality, you know, diminished yeah. and people moved on.
Stretched too thin, right? I mean, that's
exactly.
the deal. Chris Palmieri, the Bloomberg News bureau chief out here in Los Angeles. Chris, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This final note on the way out today brought to you by the phrase, okay, I mean, I guess, fine. McDonald's is really interested in getting more people to use its mobile app, so it's running a contest. Order via the app from now through August 24th, and you will be entered to win what the company is calling its McGold card. Only one of them will be issued. Basically, two free meals a week for 50 years. Cash value, the company says, $52,350, about which two things. Number one seems cheap. McDonald's reported Q2 profits a couple of weeks ago, $1.5 billion in net income. Number two, that's a lot of Big Macs. I mean, right? Okay, we're going. Dow Industrials off 0.75% on this Friday, 196 points. That is the Dow Jones Contagion Edition. S&P 500 shed 0.7%, 20 points. NASDAQ off 0.2%. That is 52 points. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Our executive editor is Evelyn LaRubia. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourselves a great weekend, everybody. We will see you again on Monday. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.